Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I had the opportunity to fill in for the great Dr. Sebastian Gorka on America First, Salem Media Group. And now we are going to share those thoughts with you, and they were very well received. And we talked about Kanye West 2020 Explained. We go even deeper, and I tell you my personal experiences, and we give a full-throated examination of the shame of the cities, how Democrats have destroyed our inner cities. Email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Listen to our sister episode with Madison Cawthorn, who's going to be the youngest elected member of Congress if he wins his election in November. Sure looks like he will. Get involved with Turning Point USA, tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Again, email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Action-packed episode in store. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
The president was in great form this last weekend at Mount Rushmore. I want to dive into that and also get into Kanye West 2020. What do we make of that? I'm actually probably one of the only people that has spent extensive time with both Kanye West and President Trump. In fact, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, geez, Candace Owens and I, Candace, our communications director at Turning Point USA for a couple of years, and now she runs Blexit, Blexit.com, and does a terrific job of it, speaks truth every single day. She happened to strike up a friendship with Kanye West when he tweeted out, "I love the way Candace Owens thinks." And I happened to meet Mr. West and all that comes with that. It was, he's a creative guy, pretty brilliant. And I could actually make the argument that Kanye West running for president is a very good thing for President Trump and his reelection. So I want to get into that. But before I do, I was watching cable television over the weekend and I saw the continual and repeated violence happening in our inner cities. Two more kids were shot and killed in Chicago over the weekend, July 4th, Independence Day weekend. It is the third straight weekend of children being gunned down in the streets. Natalia Wallace. Do you know that name? Natalia Wallace? Well, BLM Inc., what I call the organization that pretends to fight for black lives, BLM Inc., a multi-hundred million dollar a year organization that has taken money from good forces and not so good forces in our society towards, I think, sinister and malevolent aims, has been amazingly silent on the story of Natalia Wallace. Natalia Wallace was a 7-year-old that was gunned down this weekend in Chicago. Every weekend, every July 4th weekend in Chicago, we know there's going to be bloodshed. There were 75 shot over the weekend and two children killed. Third weekend this has happened. So let's just go through the Chicago gun violence right now to date. 20 have been shot and killed, 94 shot and wounded, 114 total shot, and 21 total homicides. That's just since July 1st in the last 5 days. And so my very good friend, dear friend and American patriot, Tom Patrick, who I've known for years, had an opportunity to catch up with him recently, and he reminded me about this booklet that Dave Horowitz from the Dave Horowitz Freedom Center composed called The Shame of the Cities. And it is so true. Why Republicans are not seizing harder on the tragedy that is happening in our inner cities because of Democrat policies is inexplicable to me. Democrats have run our urban centers for decades. Democrats have to own the violence, the killing, the poverty, the lack of hope. So let's go city by city. Let's start with Detroit. Do you know the last time there was a Republican mayor of Detroit was 1962? I think it's fair to say that Democrats can own whatever is happening in the city of Detroit. So a 1960s crime spree after they elected a Democrat mayor caused a huge exodus and an increase in taxes. Sound familiar? The average income per person in Detroit is $14,861 a year, about half of the national average. The average household income, $26,955 a year, almost half the average. The poverty rate is 38%, which is 2.5 times the national average. In an independent study that was done of all of the cities across the country, 384 metro areas were studied, on which was the most free and least free metro areas. Some of the most free were in South Dakota and Texas. And I just recently interviewed Governor Kristi Noem. I encourage you guys to check out that episode on The Charlie Kirk Show. She's one of the few courageous governors we have left in our country. But out of 384 metro areas, Detroit was ranked 345th most free out of 384 metro areas. Public sector teacher unions and public sector unions run Detroit into the ground. Detroit subsidizes, meaning they pay pensioners so much. So many people receive pensions in Detroit. It's twice the amount of people that are actually employed by the city. Again, let's just do a recap. The last time a Republican ran Detroit was in 1962. It's not a funding issue for the Detroit public schools. They spend over $15,500 a year per pupil, per student. $15,500 per year, which is almost double the national average. $15,500 per year. I'm sorry, it's about 50% more than the national average. And that is according to the Wall Street Journal. It's so bad. In fact, the schools in Detroit were so bad, despite Democrats doing nothing but running these cities, for nearly 50 or 60 years. It's actually coming up on 60 years now. It'll be the 60th anniversary in 2022 since a Republican's been mayor of Detroit. That even Secretary of Education under Barack Obama, Arne Duncan, categorized the Detroit public schools as a national disgrace in 2009. From 2009 to 2013, it won the award of America's Most Dangerous City. I think Chicago can conveniently take the mantle for that now. An independent study was done by a man named Robert Bob, who is the Washington, D.C. Board of Education, when they were trying to prevent bankruptcy, and they found that over 257 ghost employees were illegally receiving checks from the Detroit public schools. So people said, well, we don't fund these schools enough. Well, first of all, it's well above the national average in a lot of these Democrat union cities, well above the national average. And the money you're even appropriating is not even going towards educating the kids. A lot of it is going towards funding ghost employees. 2 months after that, 7 additional public officials in the Detroit area were charged with felonies for operating an embezzlement scheme that siphoned tens of thousands of dollars out of the school system. It's according to Judicial Watch. Judicial Watch, that does a great job. It was also discovered that 500 people who had been illegally enrolled as a health care plan dependents were costing the school district millions of dollars per year. And so what do? They raise taxes, more people leave the city. And then they don't do anything when people riot, loot, and commit arson. Why Republicans are not repeating these numbers every single day, and President Trump is, I got to give him credit. President Trump has been focusing in on how this is the shame of the cities, but it should be a daily, hourly drumbeat. How about the schools? What do you get for $15,500 a year per pupil, 50% more than the national average? Well, the percentage of students in the Detroit public schools who are proficient in math, 15.7% of third graders, 18.8% of fourth graders, 17% of fifth graders, and 13.6% of sixth graders. I agree with Arne Duncan. This is a national disaster. The percentage of students whose scores indicated proficiency in reading, 42% of third graders, 40% of fourth graders. My goodness. Only fewer than 10% of fifth to eighth graders were proficient in science. In 1927, back when Republicans used to run Detroit, the New Republic, which is a left-wing Marxist rag now, called the Detroit school system one of the finest in the world. Now it is probably the worst in the country. 1967, the last time there was a Republican that ran Detroit. And now that they have Governor Gretchen Whitmer, it's not going to get better very soon. So while BLM Inc. is marching in the streets over this Independence Day weekend, while BLM Inc. And mind you, that is what I call that organization, BLM Inc. So I refuse to say a statement that is, of course, true while also saying something critical of that organization. And they use that intentionally to try to insulate and shield themselves from criticism. They have remained silent when it has come to the murders of innocent black individuals at the hands of other black individuals across the country. It would be one thing if there was not this sort of carnage happening across the country. But if you just saw the numbers in Chicago over this last weekend, where is BLM Inc.? Nowhere to be found. In fact, they are still protesting something that we all agreed upon. They are still protesting the individual police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who did something evil and unspeakable. We all agree on that. No one's defending that. Yet, they have tried to create an entire narrative to try to hypnotize you into something that is pathologically untrue. They have tried to convince you that America is a racist, bigoted country. We are the most systemically decent country in the history of the world. In fact, you have to go out of your way to try to find racism in our country. In fact, sometimes you have to create it. Just look at Jussie Smollett. Just look at the recent NASCAR incident, where sometimes you have to find things that aren't true and intentionally contort them and misrepresent them to try to make them fit your narrative. Now, I'm not saying that evil things do not individually happen sparingly. What I am saying is that we are actually a tremendously decent country to each other. When I ask black people, are your interactions with people of a different race generally decent or not decent? The answer is almost always decent. In fact, where I went to high school in Wheeling, Illinois, it was a majority-minority high school, 53% English as a second language. You had to go out of your way to find someone that had something, some statement, some opinion that was rooted in hatred. As America, as Dennis Prager says, America's Trinity, liberty, in God we trust, e pluribus unum, we've actually done a pretty good job of striving towards that. But now we have to be lectured by BLM Incorporated on how we are a racist, bigoted country. And mind you, BLM Incorporated uses ActBlue Payment Processing Solutions, which is the number one payment processor for the Democrat Party. So basically, when you donate to BLM Inc., you are harvesting data for Joe Biden, for Ilhan Omar, for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for Ayanna Pressley, for Nancy Pelosi. So for all these self-righteous suburbanites that have been sending in money because they feel they have to atone for a sin that they have never committed, so they have a free flow of capital to the most radical elements of American society, and they think that they are going to help eradicate racism to give it to BLM Inc. In fact, they're funding a fundamentally racist organization. I opened up the program by talking about David Horowitz's book, The Shame of the Cities, by John Perazzo, David Horowitz Freedom Center, and my friend Tom Patrick showed it to me. And when you go piece by piece, you go city by city, you realize how fundamentally broken Democrat leadership is. We talked about Detroit. Let's talk about Baltimore. The last time there was a Republican mayor in Baltimore was 1967. In the 50s and 60s in Baltimore, the median income was 7% higher than the national average. So Baltimore was doing great back when they had Republican mayors. Now, their violent crime rate is 80% higher than most cities. It's 7.6 violent crimes for every 1,000 residents. In Detroit, out of 100 of the most, the biggest cities in the country, they came to 87 out of 100 in household income. They used to be in the top 20%. In schooling, again, they fund $15,483 a year for each K through 12 student, twice the national average. 14% of their fourth graders and 16% of all their eighth graders read proficiently. They did a study of 13 high schools in Baltimore that were almost all black schools. They couldn't find one fifth grader that could read at grade level. Not one fifth grader that could read at grade level. Not one. There are 47,000 abandoned homes in Baltimore and 16,000 vacant buildings. How does this happen? It's because when you perpetually elect leftist Democrats that raise taxes, that bathe in graft and corruption, and you have single party rule, it is incredibly unhealthy for any sort of city, county, or country to live through that. And in fact, if you think you can just abolish hierarchies and you think you can get rid of any form of evil because you're going to continue to elect Democrats or have these vast social movements, you're incredibly incorrect. See, one of the fundamental flaws in leftist philosophy, and this is a Rousseauian idea, is that if they think they get rid of the police, they get rid of the trappings of the modern era, somehow people will be better. If that's the case, why is it that two people were killed in Chaz or Chop or that sovereign country that once existed in Seattle, Washington? If you get rid of the police and people are going to get better, why were two innocent people murdered there? When you read the numbers and you look deep into the data, and we are a fact-first show and we are a fact-first movement here. For those of you just tuning in, this is Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA, the nation's largest student organization on 2,000 high school and college campuses across the country. You will find that the communities that suffer the most, that are predominantly black communities, they are not suffering because of institutional racism. They are suffering because of institutional Democrat control. They are not suffering because of racist white people. They are suffering because of inept, corrupt, leftist Democrats that happen to sometimes also be black Democrats. You look at the violent crime rate in Baltimore is 3.7 times higher than the national average. 3.7 times higher. Go to Washington, D.C. The last time Washington, D.C. had a Republican mayor was in 1910. It has been 110 years. In Washington, D.C., things were going well until the 1968 race riots, right after Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. And now you can see, despite Washington, D.C. having one of the best class sizes in the country, 12-to-1 class size, they spend $29,000 a year per pupil. They have some of the lowest outputs. Only 25% of their fourth graders performed well in math, and only 30% of their fourth graders performed well in reading. If you want to destroy something that works, allow the virus of leftism to come into it. Functioning cities, functioning communities, functioning counties, vibrant businesses will cripple under the disease of leftism. Devon McNeil, Sikoria Turner, Natalia Wallace, Roita DeMarco Giles, and Jace Young. You don't know those names? Interesting. It's not your fault. It's because the media and BLM Inc. will not talk about it. Devon McNeil was an 11-year-old shot down over this last weekend, gunned down, killed in Washington, D.C., 11 years old. Sikoria Turner, 8 years old, Atlanta. Natalia Wallace, 7 years old, Chicago. Roita DeMarco Giles, 8 years old, Hoover, Alabama, right outside of Birmingham, Alabama. Jace Young, 6-year-old, San Francisco. BLM Inc. will not acknowledge that 5 black children were killed over the weekend because of black-on-black crime. In fact, they conveniently ignore it, that children are being gunned down in the street. But it shouldn't come as a surprise because BLM Inc. is incredibly silent on the horror of abortion in our country. 480,000, more or less, abortions every single year are black children in the womb. There's about 1 million abortions a year. About 48% of all the abortions are black women. Fluctuates year to year, but even if it's at the lower end, let's say it's 400,000 a year. It's nothing new for BLM Inc. to ignore the slaughter of innocent black individuals across the country. Instead, they are trying to start and sow racial division. One of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter admitted that she was a trained Marxist. She said, "We are trained Marxists." What does that actually mean? You hear these terms, Marxist, Machiavellian. Well, I'm going to try to make it easy to understand. And that's what we always do every single day on the Charlie Kirk Show. We try to walk people through what these ideas mean and where they come from. Well, of course, Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto in the mid-1800s. He was inspired greatly from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, someone who thought that the state of human beings was actually rather good, that we have to get rid of private property and get rid of the world around us as we know it, and then human beings can live in harmony and a utopia. Of course, it's total rubbish and nonsense. But the head of Black Lives Matter, or BLM Inc., I should say, she says herself that we're trained Marxists. Well, do you happen to know the name Antonio Gramsci? I always mispronounce it. I struggle with the pronounce. I think it's Gramsci, or some people say Gramsci, but I'll say Gramsci. Do you know who that is? He was the author of Cultural Marxism. He said, and I quote, this is the 1930s, Antonio Gramsci, who was actually locked up in prison when he wrote this, until Marxists, quote, conduct a long march through the institutions of the West, religious, cultural, and educational, uprooting Christianity, we will never be successful. Sums it up pretty well. You see, the left understands that they are not going to be able to cripple America until they're able to infiltrate every single aspect of decent society, until they are able to infiltrate the schools, the churches, Hollywood, and they're pretty close to this. Now, mind you, BLM Inc., they say they are trained Marxists. They use a statement that is so incredibly true, yet their mission statement is not their statement. Isn't that incredible? That the name of their organization is actually contrary to what they do. That is the ultimate form of deception. It's actually rather Orwellian, but that's a different conversation for a different time, where they say something that is 100% true, but they don't actually fight for Devon McNeil or Sakoria Turner, the children, the black children that were gunned down in the streets. And for Republicans out there, this is an opportunity to go communicate to the inner cities and say the five words that can resonate with black mothers: school choice for black kids. We are going to deliver school choice for black kids. We are going to put more police, not less police. We are going to rebuild the fathers in a home. I dove into the numbers here. The last time there was, we're going through the shame of the cities, which is how Democrats have destroyed our inner cities and with it have betrayed black Americans. And I'm telling you right now, Republicans were founded as an anti-slavery party in the 1860s and gave dignity and hope to black America. And Republicans should be able to do that again today. Republicans have a moral obligation to give dignity to all Americans. And specifically in Chicago, you have seen this violence increase dramatically. And the deeper I dive into the tragedy of Democrat leadership, it's incredible. In 1931 was the last time there was a Republican mayor of Chicago. 1931. And so what is the commonality here? Of course, there are the failing public schools, and we need educational choice for black parents, parental choice when it comes to education, or school choice, but some people get confused as what school choice actually means. But we need fathers back in the home. When we allowed the Great Society program to be pushed in the 1960s through Lyndon Baines Johnson, we removed fathers in the home. So I have some numbers that I have not yet shared with my audience or with all of you before, which are incredible. This is just from from Illinois. 75 to 80% of children, black children in the city of Chicago, are born out of wedlock. So then a nonprofit went into the prison system and did a survey. Do you know that 70% of male prisoners in Illinois did not grow up with a stable father in the home? 70%. It's a pretty significant number. 60% of all rapists in the state of Illinois did not grow up with a steady father. 72% of adolescent murderers, no father in the home. So where's the movement that says black fathers matter? Well, if you go to BLM Inc., their website, they say they want to disrupt and destroy the nuclear prescribed family. How are they not already doing that? How are they not already destroying the core fabric of the family in our country? And so it's very important that we as conservatives and Republicans have a zero tolerance policy. I talked about last week on my podcast, and many of you reached out to me very positively when I talked about Senator Mike Braun, Republican from Indiana, who said he supports the BLM Inc. movement, and he was not misquoted. And you listen to him, he says, yes, I do support the movement. Now, he has recently backtracked from that. And if you're like me, do you feel that Republicans need to be fighting harder right now? Do you feel that Republicans and conservatives need to stand up with more of a backbone and a spine? Now, President Trump was terrific over the weekend at Mount Rushmore. Phenomenal. In fact, I think it was the best speech of his entire presidency. And one of the things that I've been talking about is how we need to get our children to love America again. This is something that I focused on in a particular article I wrote for American Greatness, amgreatness.com, and I spoke about this extensively on our podcast, the Charlie Kirk Show, where I said we need to get our children to love America again. It is time to get our kids to believe in the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. The president over the weekend said there's a campaign to erase our values and indoctrinate our children. I have to say, I'm so pleased to hear him say this. I'm going to get to the sound in just 1 second. But this is something that we have been advocating for that is a winning issue. Even amongst moderate Democrats, they feel that our school system is intentionally trying to deceive and indoctrinate innocent minds. Play cut two.
As we meet here tonight, there is a growing danger that threatens every blessing our ancestors fought so hard for, struggled, they bled to secure. Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children.
He's exactly right. This is something we fight every single day at Turning Point USA, TPUSA.com, TPUSA.com, to engage and to train the next generation of young people around first principles. The president continued, and every single Republican needs to follow suit here, because any Republican then that thinks they can run to the hills and not engage in this culture war is sadly mistaken. We need every single Republican senator, Republican congressperson to roll up their sleeves and to not be afraid of being called bad names by the Washington Post and the New York Times, and call out the radical elements that are now dominating the Democrat Party. The president then said there's extreme indoctrination teaching our kids to hate America. A similar but different statement, cut four, play tape.
The violent mayhem we have seen in the streets and cities that are run by liberal Democrats in every case is the predictable result of years of extreme indoctrination and bias in education, journalism, and other cultural institutions. Against every law of society and nature, our children are taught in school to hate their own country and to believe that the men and women who built it were not heroes, but that were villains. The radical view of American history is a web of lies. All perspective is removed. Every virtue is obscured. Every motive is twisted. Every fact is distorted. And every flaw is magnified until the history is purged and the record is disfigured beyond all recognition.
Now, President Trump saying this in front of Mount Rushmore. If you have not had the chance to visit Mount Rushmore, I highly encourage you to do it. It's incredibly gorgeous. The people of South Dakota, it's probably one of my new favorite states in the entire country. I feel like I'm back in our country. American flags everywhere. Very few of any people wearing masks. People smiling. It's incredible. And yet, CNN in 2006 said that when Barack Obama, I'm sorry, 2008, when Barack Obama visited Mount Rushmore, they said it was majestic and quite a sight. When Donald Trump visits Mount Rushmore in 2020, 12 years later, they say it's a monument of two slave owners. Not talking about how George Washington, the founder of our country, Thomas Jefferson, the author of our country, Teddy Roosevelt, the fulfiller of the destiny, and Abraham Lincoln, the preserver of the Union. The Marxists are on the march, and they will continue to take terrain and take down statues and infiltrate every single corner of American society until we, decent, patriotic Americans who happen to be Christian, who happen to be conservative, many of us, and even if you're not those things, if you are decent and you love your country, you need to stand and confront tyranny. Because what you have right now is the weak and the cowardly taking over every single institution across the country. Whether it be corporate America, church life, family life, you are seeing the weak and the cowardly demand that you abide by their authoritarian, tyrannical worldview. That somehow there's something wrong with your immutable characteristics, that you must take a knee for something else besides God. If you feel like you are losing your country, you're right. We are losing our country. It is one of the great American suicides, great suicides of a great power that you could possibly imagine. So how do we reverse it? We reverse it with courage and truth, with people that are willing to confront tyranny. Problems that are not confronted inevitably multiply. If you do not fight and stand and combat the lies and the injustices around you, then we won't have a country anymore. I see more times than not there are good conservatives and Christians out there that are paralyzed by what the left can possibly do to them. And I get that it is a tough time to get engaged and involved in this. And what we do every single day is we empower young people to stand for truth, to have a backbone and a spine, to confront the incredible, sinister, malevolent nature of the left. And I'm actually more optimistic than ever before because it is the students who are we empowering at Turning Point USA? It is students on the front lines of America's culture war. They are the ones that have more conviction, more clarity, more courage to fight and to win than even some people that are many generations older than them. Kanye 2020? I talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I'll touch on it today as well. Who does this really help? So with this news, who's nervous and who wants Kanye to run? So first we have to say, I've actually had the opportunity to get to know Kanye West. I've had the opportunity to travel with Kanye West. I've had the opportunity to see Kanye West make music. This was large in part thanks to Candace Owens, who's our former communications director at Turning Point USA and did and does a terrific job for all things conservative movement. Traveled the country with Candace, and she caught Kanye West's attention when he tweeted out, "I love the way Candace Owens thinks." And this has broke the internet, and I've probably gotten more questions from reporters and from just very interested parties about this than anything else I've done recently. And the questions they're saying is Kanye serious? Well, the first answer is, I don't know. I think that's a fair answer. But don't immediately dismiss it. I think we learned that lesson in 2015, not to be immediately dismissive of someone in pop culture that wants to run for the presidency. I would hope that we have learned that lesson. Secondly, who, if he does run and he files the FEC paperwork and he signs the forms and he collects his signatures, there's a lot of ifs, and it's not that people can't do it. It's just a lot of work. If he does all those things, who does it help? Who does it hurt? Well, Kanye would probably draw a significant amount of black votes. I had the opportunity to walk the streets of Chicago with Kanye West, and I could tell you he is revered and loved by the black community, despite what the left tells you, despite what the public polling. They say, oh, Kanye's lost his black base. I didn't see any evidence of that at all whatsoever. When I was traveling with him and I was in the south side of Chicago with him about a year and a half ago. In fact, I think that he's still incredibly loved in the black community. It's also young people that would vote for him, obviously, of his musical influence, his creative flair, his endorsement that he has received from Elon Musk certainly does not hurt. So Donald Trump in certain states will probably be able to solidify his 45-46% base. Might be able to get as high as 48% and definitely 55-60% in other states like the Dakotas and Kansas and Missouri. But in certain states where President Trump might be hitting a ceiling, a third-party entrant into the race might be just what the campaign needs. In fact, if I was Joe Biden, I would not be pleased with this news. Now, some people, the lazy analysis, and I think the incorrect analysis is, oh, Kanye West's a Trump supporter, therefore this is going to hurt Donald Trump. I don't actually believe that at all. I don't. I don't know one Trump supporter who is now reconsidering their vote because of Kanye West's entry into the race. I do know people that would passively and begrudgingly support Joe Biden that might now support Kanye West. And yes, Kanye West is a little bit wild. He's a little bit fun. He's off the wall. He's interesting. He's a creative, all those things. He could still get a certain amount of votes. Do I think he could be president? Who knows anymore? Who knows? All I know is this, is that Joe Biden running this prevent defense football equivalent. And boy, do I miss sports. These lockdowns have just been an absolute tragedy for cultural institutions that I enjoy and that I love. But I'll tell you, Joe Biden playing prevent defense, just waiting out the clock, trying to say, oh, maybe if I wait long enough, I too can be president of the United States. He is in the candidate protection program. Maybe if I wait long enough, I can eventually get elected. That's not sustainable. And I can tell you this, any governor at this point that is continuing to lock down their states is not following the data. They're not. This is a government-created crisis at this point. And I'm going to get into the pandemic in just one second, but to close the Kanye West point, because I do want to get into the government-created crisis and the epidemic that is no longer actually statistically trending towards being an epidemic, is that Kanye West, or Ye, or Yeezy, he could be a highly disruptive force who will still not say a negative thing about Donald Trump. In fact, if Trump was smart, not saying Trump was not, is not smart, a better way to phrase that is a smart thing for Trump to do. Let me phrase it that way, which would be a better way to do it. I don't want Media Matters to say, Charlie Kirk says X, Y, Z. That is, of course, not what I'm saying. A smart thing for Trump to do, which he does quite often, would be to applaud Kanye's entry into the race. I could tell you Kanye thinks very highly of President Trump. I think President Trump should want Kanye West in the race. I think that this would be a very positive thing for the consolidation of certain supports of support of voters. So to now segue to the Chinese coronavirus and the lockdowns that are coming with it, this is a government-created crisis. You could start to see, you see Joe Biden, you see a lot of these other politicians almost wanting the crisis to continue. This is no longer statistically an epidemic. It's not. It's trending to actually show that an epidemic means that week after week you have to have more deaths than the week prior to it and trend in that direction. And actually, according to John Solomon at justthenews.com, he says this. He says coronavirus deaths in the country have nearly reached a level where the virus will cease to qualify as an epidemic. You probably didn't hear that one in your mainstream press. If you calculate the nursing homes into the equation, if you count the nursing home deaths, it is a vast majority out of the deaths. I read here from a Twitter account, Real Development. He mapped out the weekly percentage of deaths. By the way, you know what I find is that some of these anonymous Twitter accounts do better journalism than any of our mainstream institutions, like the failing New York Times or the Washington Post. They do an incredible job, an extraordinary job, at finding some of these statistics. So Illinois, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania governors have forced nursing homes to accept sick individuals resulting in mass death. In the rest of the United States, without these policies, the Chinese coronavirus barely crossed CDC epidemic threshold of 7.2% of weekly deaths. That's a government-created crisis of forcing nursing home deaths, forcing people into nursing homes for deaths. The United States is, of course, leading the world in testing by far. Mortality rates are decreasing. So not only are we testing more per capita than any other country, but our case fatality rate is the lowest in the world. That's right. Our case fatality rate is the lowest in the world. So much for people saying that we have the worst healthcare system in the world. The case fatality rate of the Chinese coronavirus in France, thanks to universal healthcare, is about 17%. United Kingdom, 16%. Italy, 14%. United States and Germany, right around, according to this chart, which is the case fatality rate, and the citation here is the European CDC and OneWorldData.org. I want to make sure I get the statistic right, OneWorldData.org, which just goes to show that the United States has the lowest case fatality rate in the entire world because we've tested so much, and now we're learning that you do not have a high likelihood of dying from this virus. In fact, you have a very low likelihood of dying from this virus. And the more we test, the more we're going to actually lower that case fatality rate. And the reason is that most cases are asymptomatic, not diagnosed at all, or have very low to mild symptoms. The people that are dying at the highest extent are individuals that have underlying health conditions or are in nursing homes. And now just today, Harvard University, the alleged greatest school in the entire world, with no evidence and no data, has said they are not going to have classes at all in the fall of 2020 or the academic year of 2020 to 2021. They have robbed Harvard kids of their on-campus experience so that they can learn to hate America in person. And they have not even adjusted their tuition slightly. They haven't. They have not adjusted their tuition slightly from $50,000 a year. I think it's $49,500 or something extraordinarily ridiculous. Harvard should be fully open. Harvard should fully open its doors in the fall. And guess what? These colleges that don't are actually proving the model that you can educate effectively online doing Zoom calls, and kids can maybe not have to go to brick and mortar four-year institutions. Maybe they don't have to borrow money they don't have to study things that don't matter, to find jobs that don't exist. Maybe they don't have to go endlessly into debt. What if I told you that an individual that was a conservative who was in a prominent position of an activist group tweeted out and said that any individual, because of their skin color, were subhuman or said they had genetic defects? That'd be disgusting, and it would be on the front page of every single news outlet. Oh, but it's not a conservative. It is the leader of BLM Inc. Toronto, a co-founder, in fact. Yusra Kogali, I apologize if I mispronounced her name, I mean no offense, wrote a social media post in which she said basically white people have a genetic defect because they have inability to produce melanin. It's now gone viral in conservative circles, and you see the mainstream activist press conveniently ignore it. She continued by saying, white people are recessive genetic defects. This is factual. White people need white supremacy as a mechanism to protect their survival as a people because all they can do is produce themselves. Black people, simply through their dominant genes, can literally wipe out the white race if we had the power to. Wow. Kogali, co-founder of BLM Toronto, who will probably be able to keep her position because the press will cover for her and will not cover this fairly or accurately, says that white people, quote, have a higher concentration of enzyme inhibitors, which suppresses melanin production, adding that melanin is important, number of things. Okay. She even says that it directly communicates with cosmic energy. And she says this, finally, she tweeted out, please, Allah, give me the strength not to kill these men and white folks out here today. After being criticized, she says, I'm not a public official, I'm not a police officer. The state does not entrust me with violent weaponry. I've never contributed to the mass targeting of a community. No, you've just said that white people are genetically defective. All I've done is turn a phrase of rhetorical flourish to voice my frustration. Could you imagine if a conservative would dare say something like this? Of course not. And by the way, this is nothing new. Other individuals of BLM Inc. have said similar things. And yet, time and time again, the left does not believe they have to live by the same set of rules as we decent American conservatives do. I'll give you another example. Educational choice or school choice. The left rails against school choice, and the president is right to advocate for parental choice in education, voucher programs allowing kids to choose better schools. It is the moral position, is a factually proven position. It is a politically viable position, is a position that helps tremendously for communities that are disadvantaged. Yet the Democrats say that they oppose school choice. But while saying that, they'll send their kids to luxurious private schools. While saying they don't like school choice, they'll send their kids to private schools. The left conveniently says that they are not in favor of guns. Yet they walk around with armed protection. Evidence A example is the Minneapolis City Council. I don't know if you saw the story last week. The Minneapolis City Council is trying to abolish the police, but meanwhile they're paying $4,000 a day for private security. So it's okay if they're protected, but for the black business owner that had their business burned down, no, we're going to get rid of the police even though you don't want it, but it makes us feel good. It's a great cocktail conversation. You see, the left is dominated by academics that live in a world that has never existed, never will exist, but quite honestly can be theorized on a chalkboard or a blackboard, but they are so in the world of theorizing, not the world of empiricism or the world of what can be seen and measured from experience or from logical thinking, that they want to impose the rest of the world something that is actually so contrarian to modern-day Western thinking. This is incredibly sinister and dangerous. And mind you, the more that we indulge the left-wing professors and academics, the more we are going to digress into a society that is, quite honestly, more primitive and less civilized, more infant and less mature, there's not that many different courses a society can take. There's probably just a handful. And the one that the left is quickly trying to descend us into is one where there is the abolition of the middle class. And Aristotle talked about the necessity of the middle class, the golden mean, as he talked about. But if you abolish the American middle class, you abolish the workers, people that work with their hands, people that shower before work and shower after work. When you deteriorate and obliterate that whole segment of society, and you have the people that are dependent on government, which the left wants that to be 60 to 70 to 80% or 90% of the entire American society, then you have the ruling class. Then you have the people that live in Beverly Hills. They live in the Upper East Side. They live in the high rises in Miami. They live in Highland Park, Texas. You get the type of demographic I'm talking about. Those are the people that are the philosopher kings. They are the ones that are given the highest advantages, and they don't have to be concerned with the threat of rebellion against the proletariat, from the proletariat. Because the bourgeoisie can live freely. But you see, they use the promise of utopia, which literally means nowhere. Utopia, if you look at the root term, it means nowhere. They use the promise of that utopia to captivate and hypnotize the citizenry, to control them. So now, mind you, the left is so sinister, they're so talented, that they know they are not going to be able to achieve any form of equal outcome. I talk about this often. I encourage you to check out the Charlie Kirk Show. Type in subscribe. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review. Equal under the law is moral and necessary. Equal opportunity is noble and should try to be achieved. Equal outcome is evil. But the left tries to attack unequal outcomes instead of trying to address unequal opportunities or applaud the fact that we do have equality under the law. And because of that, they're able to stir up incredible amounts of tribalism throughout society. The left, in a lot of different ways, wants us to revert back to our tribes, wants to destroy the Western civilization miracle that we are living through. By trying to get the West to commit suicide, and that's a very important point, and I could dive into that a lot deeper throughout the show, is it's not that we are being infected. We are, but a lot of this we are doing to ourselves. It's not a foreign invasion. It's not foreign missiles that are cascading down into our country. It is our own children that have not been taught to love America, and the president did a phenomenal job of addressing this over Independence Day weekend. To know the fundamental values, to understand first principles, to know the Constitution, to know our birth certificate, the Declaration of Independence. And so if you're not able to understand or to captivate the next generation around these ideas, you will no longer have a country. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Please get involved with Turning Point USA. Go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Hit subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. If you guys want to get a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, subscribe, 5-star review, screenshot it, email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Email me what you're reading, what you're listening to, your questions that I can answer for you, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless.